Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Okay, so we are back to the topic of feminism and gender equality in Central Asia. Or this episode has two legs. A, 6 months ago, we had a similar conversation, as all of you might remember, with one of our panelists on board today following her earth-shaking feminist bombshell in Kyrgyzstan. Then we promised her to get back to it later. So in part, this podcast is about that promise. And B, in recent days, we have seen a number of women-led campaigns taking off in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. So we were kind of wondering, what does this tell us? Is there anything in common and what the future holds for them? So without further ado, let's get into it with our super panel, Zehra Asılbek, a feminist Kyrgyz singer who shook Kyrgyzstan 6 months ago with a bold feminist song. She is joining us from Bishkek. Kamila Sultanova is with us. She's a TED speaker, advisor on workforce diversity, also co-founder of Finland branch of Global Dignity, and a lot more. She's originally from Uzbekistan, currently joining us from Berlin. Bermet Talent is with us. She's a Kyrgyz journalist, currently in Kyiv with the Kyiv Post. Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. And Bruce is joining us from Prague. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So let's handle first the women march. And there were more than one of them in recent weeks. And let's get started in Bishkek, perhaps with you, Zehra. I understand this type of marches happen every year, mostly in recognition of Women's International Day. How did the march go this year?
Well, I got to say that, yeah, it is conducted every year. But this year was so special. I think we never had this many people coming and, you know, marching. It was amazing. And also, the Women's March was joined by the LGBT community, which I think is also a great thing. So it was quite incredible, I think.
Was this only in Bishkek, or you also seen this in other places, regions in Kyrgyzstan?
As far as I know, it was in Bishkek and Osh, southern city, yeah.
I will get back to it. I mean, there were some controversies. At least some people have seen that march or things that they said a little bit in a controversial manner. But we are going to talk about that later. Before that, just a little bit earlier, we had another women-led march in a different context in Kazakhstan. But one common factor is that those marches too led by women, which become more famous as a mother's protest.
Unfortunately, I didn't follow it, but I followed the Kyrgyz march. Because I had a lot of friends who attended it. Like Zehra said, it was probably the most crowded march in the history of women marches in Bishkek. I believe like 400 people attended it. If I'm not mistaken, Kyrgyzstan was the only country in Central Asia that held a march of this kind on March 8th. But what we see a lot of progress in this sense, but at the same time, I think there's also a deep social divide, and it's growing. And there's part of the country that it's leaning towards more equal rights. And there is another part that is looking at more traditional cultural roots. And unfortunately, like the rejoice over the success of this march was clouded by a huge row that followed the march because of LGBT participants that also marched with women. And they flew rainbow flags and cheered for equal rights. And someone called it as the first gay pride parade. And I think, I actually don't know where it came from, but I saw it several times on social media. And I think this angered the public. And there was a huge argument. There was a parliamentary debate, and some lawmakers called for banning this kind of marches. And one women lawmaker said that, if we don't stop this now, Kyrgyzstan is going to turn into Gaystan. And there were threats from a nationalist organization, Kurukchoro. So it's great that we're having this kind of discussion in Kyrgyzstan, that it's not stale. And there are moral entrepreneurs on both sides, on the side who advocate for removing negative labels from feminism and enforcing new values. And there are also moral entrepreneurs who try to protect traditional Kyrgyz values.
Yeah, and I wanted to get back to this a little bit later, but since you raised sure. that, both of you, Bermet and Zira, when I was listening to you, I was also looking at the Aki Press's news about those protests, and the headline describes this like women's march sparked outreach. So when they say that, they are talking about the LGBT community participation, or there was more to this?
I believe there were some slogans on posters that some people didn't like. I remember one of them read, "I don't want to pour tea," and a lot of people found it revolting, you know, how a woman doesn't want to pour tea. So there were things that related to women's rights, and there were and the LGBT participants, like
okay.
both things. Yeah.
Okay. Let me push the Kazakhstan aspect a little bit in the back side of the seat. Camilla, how did the March 8th, I believe, is the day when the International Women's Day are marked? So how did it go in Uzbekistan? Was there any activity at all?
From what I've been following, I've spent 3 weeks in Uzbekistan in February, so I wasn't there personally in Tashkent on the 8th of March, but I've sparked an interesting debate on mentoring and volunteering and how that, you know, leads to empowerment. And after that, it was nice. I saw a lot of events bringing up the civic engagement as to individual empowerment. And a lot of activity has been going on around co-working centers. Different events, women entrepreneurs, women in science, women in art, which is really nice to hear. The only minus side is that it's in the capital, and it's you have to pay around 5-6 euros, which is like 20-40,000 sum or 50,000 sum to get in. So it is, of course, restricted for already a resourceful group of people. What was interesting this year was two events. One was Uzbek President Mirziyoyev has arranged a big ball and big reception for a lot of women that came around from around Uzbekistan, and he had actually recorded that speech. He had been talking where Uzbekistan should be. You know, he wanted 50-50% of gender equality in politics, which was good to hear. He encouraged to women should be included in decision making so that it really works for the, you know, half of the population of Uzbekistan. So that was interesting. He gave a Zulfiya award, selected, pre-selected women, young women and women of different ages for their achievements in different walks of life. And then the second event was Uzbegim Ayol, which is also a women empowerment event where unprecedentedly they had an event which was not patronizing, but really recognizing women's role in positions and professions which is not necessarily, you know, women friendly. Let's say in military, alpine skiing, they women farmers. They had, you know, someone was like machinery operators, you know, those women came in and they showed, they had a lot of video production around it. So it was really like a big bang with a right bang, I would say, that actually, if you really look at the content and the event production, it's not only about flowers, it's not about, you know, celebrating femininity, but it's really showing that yes, women can and women should and women must, because that's right for human rights reason, for economic reason, and for democracy.
I was just listening to you, Camilla. It looks like activities in regards to Women's International Day are held still in the context of official ceremonies. And we have seen similar things taking place in Turkmenistan, in Tajikistan, and perfhaps in Kazakhstan. Obviously, Nazarbayev is famous attending Women's International Day ceremonies with his jokes and everything. I know this type of social issues that Kyrgyz women are up in arms. I mean, these things are also relevant to women in Uzbekistan, correct? As an Uzbek woman, how do you see what's happening in Bishkek in response to the type of issues which are really relevant everywhere in Central Asia?
Well, I cannot celebrate this enough and say why our neighbors have the courage and the resilience to do it, and who and what should happen that the big bang also happens in our country, in Uzbekistan. I think that there needs to be a critical mass of individuals who will do it without political or you know, whatever kind of retaliation. And, you know, Kyrgyzstan is famous for being more vocal and democratic historically. You had women as a president, right? You know, the size of population also matters to how quickly can you bring a social change.
I don't see this happening like tomorrow or, you know, another half a year, but I think still we have a chance to learn from each other and replicate the projects from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. But I personally, I'm impatient to see the same bottom-up approach to bringing social movement, to bring social, you know, equality kind of movement engagements. Because, you know, living abroad is easy to see, yeah, this is like, you can actually put it into little boxes that how this whole thing evolves. But I see that there is lack of social cohesion on this idea. And then the level of education and awareness, you know, what can women do today? It's very limited in terms of if you come from Tashkent or you come from the periphery. So we have a huge urban-rural divide to make things happen. So I think there we need to follow up and see.
Okay, let me put this in a different way. Like, you know the importance of the type of rallies that are taking place in Bishkek, demanding the women's right to gender equality there. So if you try to organize something like that, what will happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see, yeah, what do I need to do? I'll probably say, I'll check what is my requirements, like what do I need to do to get the permission? One, two, how many people, so the critical size to actually do it, I will probably get that. And three is like organizing a marathon, right? We had our first half marathon in Uzbekistan done on 21st of March. And I guess those people didn't sleep for half a year to make this happen. We need to go against what's allowed and what's needed for bureaucracy. Okay. Because I think still there is a bit of a critical approach that you're doing a public unrest.
Okay.
So no, I don't see it happening right now.
Okay. So Bruce, we supposed to have a guest from Kazakhstan, but it didn't happen the last minute. So let's go to Kazakhstan. They had their own march. The context, as I said, was different. But one common factor with the marchers in Kyrgyzstan is that both of them were women-led, which became more, you know, famous as a mother's protest in Kazakhstan. So how is this compared with the women-led marches in Kyrgyzstan?
Well, I mean, the Kazakh thing was a more protracted protest, rally kind of movement. So, I mean, it went on for weeks and weeks. And if you remember that was probably the tipping point for Nazarbayev to finally to call on the government to resign. Mm-hmm. You know, because really, I mean, how can you possibly argue with the position that these women were coming from? You know, I got a big family. I have to work night, two jobs sometimes. Social benefits are promised. They're not delivered. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can counter these arguments with at all. So it was good that they did it. The thing I thought was interesting about that protest, and in fact, this is true in a lot of places in Central Asia, is that this was started by women for one specific issue. And as other issues got added on to it, men started to get more involved in this too. I can remember an example in Kyrgyzstan when Bakiyev was on the run in April 2010, and I went down to Jalalabad to try to track him down in his native village of Tayit. And there was group that would come out, and they were on both sides. They were pro-Bakiyev and anti-Bakiyev, but the people down there called them Zhenshini Revolutsioneri. And they were the power down there. They were the ones that were giving the speeches. They were organizing a lot of the things, and the men were kind of following behind them. You know, they were like the point of the spear, and then the men would come in behind them. Now, I suppose you could argue there's a lot of reasons for that once men get involved in this, they start beating each other up or something, so they're too afraid to go out and do it themselves, and they're more than willing to let women go out and do this. So that's how it was working in Kazakhstan. You know, the same thing where women were really the power behind this whole protest campaign. It worried the authorities because it's harder for them to respond to the just claims of these people and the fact that they're women put all the male-dominated government in Kazakhstan in a really bad position of trying to figure out what the tactic was to try to counter this.
The strategy was clever, I would say. But, you know, the question is, was it a simultaneous or any pre-planning involved in this to make this a mother's march? What I'm saying is, like, the type of issues that they were raising, it's equally relevant to everyone. So how did it turn to a women's march?
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it, what they were talking about was they were saying mothers of large families. Yeah. By extension, this is just a large family. You know, many of these women were married. They had husbands that could have come out and done this too. You know, but I mean, you know, like the old saying in America, a man can work from sun to sun, but woman's work is never done. You know, for a mother, anyone will tell you that's probably the hardest job in the world. So if you have work to do besides, rights, taking care of a family, this is a huge burden. And, you know, like I said, the state had promised all kinds of benefits that weren't being delivered. You know, there was complaints from, I read some of the interviews with some of these women that were leading these protests, and they said, look, you know, I have to go to get medicine or to get extra money. I have to constantly go down to some office and keep signing forms to tell them that I still have all these children, that I still have the same needs, you know. In some cases, it was every month that they would have to go down and do this besides all the other things that they're responsible for doing, namely taking care of the family, but two, also their other jobs, you know, the work, that the employment that they had. So, I mean, it was just an incredible burden. And it was very tragic, the fire that killed those five children. But it really, I think it was the last straw for a lot of these people. And so they took to the streets and went to City Hall and started demanding people start paying attention to them.
Okay. Zira, you know, speaking of Kazakhstan, given the government reshuffle following mother's protest, one would say that they were successful. So you, as someone who leads her own campaign, how do you see the outcome of their reaction, the strategy of women-led actions, let's say, in Kazakhstan? Was it successful from your point of view?
Well, I have been following the women's march in Kazakhstan, the mother's march, but just a little bit. So I only know that, yes, there was some tragedy with the kids and the mother. So that caused people to take it to the streets and talk about it. But I don't really know the situation in Kazakhstan like deeply. I have some friends who are also feminists and everything, but then they were not the ones who took it to the streets, and they were not the ones who, you know, attended the march. And when talking to them, I realized that they were really afraid, because they're also like bloggers. They have their own social media pages where they deliver their messages, but usually those people are not the ones who take it to the streets, you know.
Yeah, you know, that context also a little bit different. But let's talk about Bishkek, the march in Bishkek. I mean, where clearly the feminism and gender equality was on their agenda. So how do you evaluate the outcome of the Bishkek rally? Was it successful from your point of view?
Yes, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was very successful, though it was challenging. Like one day before the march, the nationalistic group named Krupchoro, they were like threatening people, saying that we're going to stop this, you're going to see tomorrow what happens and everything. And that was why a lot of men joined the march the next day, because I literally like heard them saying, yeah, we are here to protect our women, and we think that they should have their fundamental human rights. So if some kind of group of men be a danger to those women, we're going to protect them. And that was why the amount of people got even bigger. So, but the outcome of it, literally like at least a week, it was shown all over the TV, all over the social media. Everyone was discussing it. Everyone was saying their opinions. So the conversation is open, and now we can all talk about it. At least we can say our opinion, because before the march, I think it was more of like, it was a taboo. Nobody talked about it. Everyone knew it was prohibited, and everyone knew that it was bad. So I think that is already a lot.
I would like to add the police worked amazingly during the Bishkek march. They actually protected the order, they protected the participants of the march.
That's right.
And this is also a sign of change, because one of the big issues with protecting women from violence or another issue is that the absence of justice, the absence of the actual protection from the state. And women don't believe that they can be protected by police or by judiciary system. That's why they rarely report violence, and they rarely take their abusive partners to court. So we had another successful case in December when a court sentenced the murderer of Burulay Turdalıkızı to 20 years in prison. Burulay was a 19-year-old woman who was kidnapped for marriage twice, and she was stabbed to death in a police station. And his friend who abetted him was sentenced to 7 years in prison. It is an incredibly important conviction. Well, of course, this conviction was for the murder, not for the actual kidnapping, but still. It was an example that if you kidnap a woman, if you hurt her, then you can go to prison.
You know, can I jump in too? Because just today, they passed a new law that strengthened the punishment for alakachu if you get caught, right? Huh. Yeah, they went from you get 5 to 10 years and or 200,000 some fine or something. Is that enough? Is that going to make it that much of a difference?
I think it's not about the law. We already had a punishment in the criminal code. There's punishment for domestic violence. I think now it's about putting this law into action, actually punishing, convicting abusive partners and men who kidnap women for marriage, who force women into marriage. Yeah, so we'll see how this law works. Mm. I mean, we have so many amazing laws that just don't work because, we have poor judiciary system, we have weak law enforcement, and we have corruption.
Yeah, Camila, earlier you were telling me that there was also a discussion going on among Kazakh activists about gender equality. Is it related to what we are talking about in Kyrgyzstan in terms of the protest, in terms of the reaction this protest is causing?
Yeah, it was arranged. I saw it yesterday, and I've been following this Instagram channel called Equality Club. Mm. In Hotel Hilton, yesterday, they had this Equality Talks event, sort of like TED Talks on equality. They had a very nice array of speakers, both from Kazakhstan, Kazakhs living abroad, and also a Canadian longtime activist and, you know, big dignitary physician who was calling in on Skype. And she has started a Voice of Libyan Women NGO. We had Madi Mabibetov. He's a columnist journalist. And so he talked about how it is to be a male and a feminist. Then there was talks. Actually, this was event in general, women rights plus religion, intersectionality, and how is it to fight all these issues such as what my colleagues here, Zere and Bermet talked on, sexual harassment, domestic violence, and pay gap, and the cultural issues. So also the venue is important. So it's not done some kind of, you know, low-key event. Mm. It's been in Hilton. It's not done during lunch break, which I also experienced even in Finland, where a gender equality talk is put during lunch. I think that's a disgrace. And they had, I don't know how many people they were there, but it was an amazing, like, I saw a few live sessions, and a speaker whose name I won't remember said that, how can you be a Kazakh woman and still want to make change in a country just because you love the country and still not be allowed? Right. And it was so deep. It's like I had a twitch in my heart because I said, everything what I do living from abroad and thousands of women we're trying to see Uzbek women change, Central Asian women change for the better. It's just out of love for the country. Yeah. And so she promoted this way of awakening from the countryside that if you don't show support, there won't be any country for any of their citizens. So that we need to have active citizenship to actually change the country for the better for our future generations.
Yeah.
So well, that was, I think, was great to hear.
Yeah, thank you very much, Camila. So we need to talk about Zera for a moment. Let's do that in the context of why are we seeing all these protests happening more and more? Is there any connection between them and why women are doing what they are doing? So I will get back to all these questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. I'm joined by Zera Asilbek, a feminist Kyrgyz singer from Bishkek, Camila Sultanova, co-founder of Finland branch of Global Dignity, Bermet Talent, Kyrgyz journalist with the Kyiv Post based in Kiev, Bruce Panier, editor of Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing feminism and gender equality in Central Asia in the context of recent women-led movements, marches, and protests. So let me start with you, Zera. So why all this is happening now? You know, the type of issues that we are talking is not new. The reaction is kind of new. The way women are teaming up is kind of new. Sometimes I wonder whether you caused all this, Zera, with your bold action.
Actually, I didn't ask myself this question, like, why is all of this happening right now? But I think that, no, I really don't know why it's happening now. I'm sorry. Like,
okay.
Because you started it, Zera. You did a song and you woke.
No. I mean, that sounds too much. Like, yeah. I don't know. That sounds too much.
No, it's always been there. It's because of the internet. I remember when I was a student in Bishkek, just being with this feminist group was almost like being marginalized underground group.
Yeah.
And there would be like weekly meetings and yeah, but that with internet, it's so much easier to find like-minded people, and it's so much easier to spread your ideas. And also thanks to internet, we can learn about other countries, like similar movements happen all around the world. And so I think that Central Asia is just being part of the global world, and the Me Too trend where women speak up about, you know, sexual harassment or domestic violence is coming to us as well.
Camila, if you want to say anything, I'm happy to listen to, in fact, encourage you to say something with your global perspective. Yeah. And also, what is real issue here? I mean, what women are trying to say?
I'm happy that Big Mac brought up the internet, because I was going to point out what is really missing in the Uzbek women movement as a bottom-up approach is the access to internet. There is a lot of things, a lot of sites are, first of all, blocked, and there is much more availability of mobile phones and internet to guys than women. And there's a lot of actually online shaming and bullying going on. That, let's say you're an Uzbek girl, you want to have a Telegram and you put your name on it. Let's say Firuza, I'm sorry to if someone is Firuza, it's just a similar and general Uzbek name. You write your name as Firuza in a Telegram and you will get requests from unknown guys. So that people just write you. And so a lot of people that I mean, speak to, I did public workshops and seminars in my hometown, Karshi. They write to me after the event and they say, with a male name. I said, why do you have a male name? She said, well, some strangers start writing to me and, you know, asking for my number, asking to meet. So there's a lot of catcalling online. Second, due to inavailability of internet, which actually works and is affordable, there is not so much awareness on what can we do as young girls and boys. Yes, everyone wants to learn English. They're not preoccupied with women movements. They're preoccupied just to make their ends meet or just learn something so that they get the hell out of there. Because truly, when I go back to, you know, my hometown, I see these English commercials, English language learning commercials. They say, if you want to go abroad, you have to learn English, or learn English and go abroad. So the justice, freedom, and self-expression, I'm afraid to say, it's not to be found in within the frames of Uzbek society, but it's elsewhere. So you wouldn't be thinking like, okay, how much burden there is for me in the society? They say, okay, what is one opportunity for me to leave? And in 20 years since I've been away, I see there's not much happening. But looking at Zeta's case and, you know, in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, if internet is available, if there is more economic empowerment, then there will be more awakening, because a lot of empowerment happens when women can earn their own money. So let's look at our women and say, how many of them depend on their male family income?
Yeah.
So if they go out there, they'll be casted out of their family clan. And, you know, this whole belonging is so much important. Where are they going to go? They can't even have a train ticket to Tashkent. They can't go to Russia. They can't go abroad. So to really start revolting, you either make sure that these things happen like in Kazakhstan, when it's a fatal case. There is no electricity or gas, and then there's issues of overworked families and women, that it's just tragic to that extent. But for now, I see it will not happen unless there is at least working internet, and then we stop this public online shaming.
But let's see. Revolting is a word that you put nicely, Camila. You know, I wanted to start the second half of the discussion with talking a little bit about Zera's journey. I mean, you started this discussion with a bold action. So tell us about your journey. I mean, it's been 6 months since the song, and then you had lots of reaction, the type of reaction that Camila was talking about. So how you have been?
There has been a lot during the last 6 months. I mean, after the outlash around the music video, I did an album that also, like, one of the songs went top 100 in iTunes and Apple Music and everything. And then I had a concert which was like free, and we had around 400 people attending the concert. And then, yeah, I went to India for a couple of months, and now I'm back, and now I'm back working on new songs and everything. So, yeah, that's how I've been. I mean, if you're asking about the journey.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations on all these successes. We wish you more of that. And also, you had a cause behind the movement that you started. So where are you in that, in achieving the cause that you had in mind when you recorded your bold song 6 months ago?
Well, you know, my intention was not like to start a movement or to like create some kind of a group of people around me or things like that. But my intention was just to make sure that in small parts of Kyrgyzstan, there are some starting projects, like, you know, small project at schools or even like maybe bigger things. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of people, not only in Bishkek, but specifically in the regions, start taking actions and start raising awareness about this issue. And
I've been getting a lot
of messages about that, like people messaging me, hey, we discussed your music video at school today, and it's cool, thank you so much, you know, so these kind of stuff. And I've been invited to Osh. I've performed in Osh, which is, like, in my opinion, the most, like, conservative city of all
the cities
in Kyrgyzstan. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Wow.
Thank you. And in Osh, there were at least, I think, 700 people. And it was kind of a TED Talk thing. And I had a lot of girls approaching me and sharing their insecurities and everything. And also, it involved a lot of girls wearing hijab. So I was really surprised about that. Really surprised. And yeah, I mean, things like that.
Okay, great. You wanted to start a discussion, which you did. Great job. And Bruce, Zira wanted to start a discussion, which she did. And now we are seeing increasingly movements, actions, and women-led protests. You know, obviously, contexts are sometimes different. But again, one common thing is that these are led by women, and they are taking the front seat. At least this is what I see it. How do you see it? Can we see it separately from each other, or there is something bigger going on in Central Asia when it comes to women participation in issues that our, you know, society faces there?
You know, since independence, the first decade was probably a write-off because people were just trying to get a hold of what the new reality was. But there's definitely a conservative movement that, you know, and it's got to be, it's male-centric. There's no doubt about it. But there's, you know, the more religious, we should be more religious. We should be more like our ancestors were and follow their traditions and customs. So there's been this pull to go back to more, like I said, conservative times. And you know, I'm not a woman, so I don't know exactly. But I can imagine that, you know, what that means is like any of the freedoms or what you've gotten, even the little bit that you've gotten used to, it, you're going to lose that because we're heading backward with some of this stuff, not forward. So this is the pushback against that. You know, the women in Central Asia are educated. You can't go back to the 19th century when women weren't when hardly any women were educated in schools. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's not going to happen. So this is the pushback against that, this conservative element in society that wants to go back to try to reclaim or reinvent the traditional lifestyle of the region prior to the arrival of the Russians, you know, which really works to the detriment of women. And, you know, enough of them are getting together and saying no, you know. And then we have people like Zere who's there and Bermet who goes there. But Camilla is able to go to Uzbekistan and talk to these people now, too. You know, there are people that are able to get in and they have a counter narrative of the way society should run and the importance of women in society.
Camilla,
I would like to continue Bruce's thought.
Tell me, is there something more to it? You know, Zira did this song and it caused lots of discussion, and then we are seeing women-led protests in Kazakhstan, the women march in Kyrgyzstan. What I'm trying to say is, yes, sometimes the context is different, but again, is there anything bigger going on in the society?
Yeah, absolutely. The next step is just continuing what Bruce said. The next step is advancing it and actually taking this agenda to women in regions who have much less access to information resource that we have. And Zere, I think when she actually what she did is amazing example of how it should be. Zere, she sang this song in Kyrgyz language, and I can tell you that there is almost no information on women's rights, on feminism in Kyrgyz language.
Correct.
And that's why it is important when there is a person who speaks the language, who goes there and who talks to those girls and young women and tells them about all these amazing progressive ideas that we have a privilege to have access to. And we have a privilege of knowing foreign languages. We have a privilege of being able to travel abroad and to meet other women who have already done this in their countries. But I always remember that there are millions of women in my home country and in Central Asia that don't have this privilege. And that's why I guess our goal is to become this kind of ambassadors and to go to people. And I want to thank Zere that she does that.
I'm subscribed
to some social media accounts, and I read some Kyrgyz websites, and you see how a lot of women, they send their questions, they seek advice online from those websites, and some of the questions you read, and I'm sorry to be crude, but the questions are like, is having too many sexual partners going to loosen my vagina? Like that level of education. I mean, I'm talking about the sex education. Or what do I do if my partner beats me? And then women give advice, oh, you have to endure. You know, it will pay off. It means that he loves you. Maybe you did something wrong yourself. Yeah. So we have to change this kind of discussion and bring more ideas, but we have to speak the language.
Yeah, the change seems to be already in the air, I think. We are having lots of discussion, although the context is different.
But it's still in the capital, you know. It's among the most educated, like progressive girls who go to good universities, who speak foreign languages, who read foreign media. Like I said, if you go to region, the situation is absolutely different there. And there's still a lot of work to do.
Okay, Camila, yeah. I think the rest of the panel say that this discussion about Women's March in Kyrgyzstan, the discussion started by Zera and then protests in Kazakhstan, this is a part of bigger kind of movement. I don't know what you think about that. And the second question is, what the timing tell us and where is this going?
Yes, so I think if we just had recently a conference on Central Asian connectivity, where a lot of regions from around the world came to share the best practices. So I think this will have a snowball effect because, you know, within Central Asia, the news goes faster than coming from, like, let's say, Western Europe or Western world. And what's next is, absolutely I agree with Vermet that we need to get the gender equality discussion, not an elitist project, as it usually is in, if we think of Middle East, that the wives of presidents has always did some kind of women empowerment, but to really go out to the average women. And my previous comment, I need to really emphasize, I've been talking on behalf of average Uzbek girls outside capital.
Yeah.
That's where the majority lives. So the next is to create a social cohesion where we have gender equality being taught in English or Russian, or then gender equality lacking information in Uzbek. So we need to bring an awareness of gender equality through Uzbek language. And I've been asking for apps to learn Uzbek language. We don't know our own language, unfortunately. And to start checking our privileges and increase people from the capital, they should just go more to the regions and have these conversations and local TED Talks. Because that's already an eye-opener how divided we are socially, culturally, economically. And so that we can actually pave way that not only one woman in Uzbekistan can talk on behalf of women. It's Tanzila Nurbayeva today.
Mm-hmm.
She's the head of National Women's Committee.
Yeah.
And I would like to see men engage more in this because of our cultural awareness. Mm-hmm. Of course, women should also work more together.
Yeah.
That no one is going to give us power unless we claim it. And so whoever is listening to it, we need to demand power together, work harder together to, you know, slash this patriarchy that's been all over us and legitimize it. So this is my wish. And I'm still hoping to get women gender equality hackathon going this year.
You are throwing lots of good words today, Camila, and you said snowball effect. Yeah. Are we talking about snowball movement now in Central Asia?
Snowballing effect, yeah.
So are we talking about the snowball movement in Central Asia, the way things are happening? Is it what you are saying?
Yes. It's not going backwards, but we need to be aware because Italy is now going against divorces. So that's already what Bruce says, that we cannot go back, but it can be with the populist movement and right-wing ideas going backwards. So we need to keep the momentum.
Okay. So, Bruce, what can keep this momentum up?
Well, we have three guests that are better, much more qualified to do that. I think more people like our three guests is it. People that are willing to speak out and reach out to the communities and show that this is a plus, not a minus. There's no threat here to anybody, no threat to men. Equality is a good thing, not a bad thing. There's nothing to be afraid of here. Like anything else, when you're one person and you have that opinion, it's kind of hard to be heard, and a lot of times you're afraid to even say that stuff. So the more the message gets out and the more people join in with this, the faster it'll get around and the quicker we'll see changes.
Can I pick on that everyone should speak out? I had this idea that Telegram today is like a sub-internet in most of Uzbekistan and Russian-speaking world, I would say. I implore every girl to start their own Telegram channel and start writing, because that's where you get your self-awareness going and you get out there. So every girl should get a Telegram channel and start pushing out her thoughts out there and being present in the internet and digital domain.
Yeah. Do you mean like anonymously? I'm sorry, do you mean anonymously?
No, not anonymously. Actually putting your name out there.
No, Zere, you should put your name out there.
For a lot of girls, it's a problem, really. Like, they cannot tell what's happening to them, to their moms, even like they cannot discuss it with their family. And I have a lot of girls texting me like, I was raped, what do I do, and everything like that, you know. And they always say, please don't publish this, don't show this to anyone, I'm only telling you this. So I think it's really hard to put your name out there.
I mean, I agree. You can put a different name if that's what you mean. I just think you should have a girl's name instead of hiding behind a Shahrukh or Alisher or Bigzot. But you can do it in so many ways, through visually, and then making stories which is not, you know, personally pertaining.
I
hear you.
It's a really uplifting discussion, and we also need to wrap up it. But we have this kind of momentum, and Camila was describing it as a snowball effect. So what can keep this discussion going? I mean, you are already running a successful campaign, but not everyone is a good singer like you. What else can keep this discussion going forward, Zera?
Well, I think it's always about, like, tendencies that people in power give. I mean, when I say people in power, I don't only mean like politicians and business people. I mean those like celebrities even, or like movie stars and everything. So I think we need to like start the new level of not asking people to give the power, to give the human right that we have, but to claim it, like to say, I have power. And like the things that you are doing, they are like violating my rights. So, you know, I think we need to have this wave of, how to say, putting people who are sexists and who are in power, putting people like who have bad background, I mean, in like maybe they have some raping stories and everything, because I know there are a lot of people in power that might have done something really wrong. And I'm talking about, for example, the businessman Babur Tolbayev, who who had to say some sexist comments. So I think we need to put the people's backgrounds out, those kind of people. So we need to encourage the girls to claim their power, to claim their human rights, and to talk about their experiences. I mean, of course, Me Too movement was a huge thing, but we need to start something like this in Kyrgyz language, I think.
Okay, let's end this discussion, Bermet, with you. So in your opinion, what can help to move this momentum forward?
I agree with what girls said before. It's giving more prominence to women's rights issues in media. Journalists play a huge role. If it gets into media, it gets discussed. Encouraging women to express their opinions more, create more media outlets or more media coverage of this kind of issues in local languages. Yeah, and then calling out men in power or men on top positions who are being sexist or calling them out for bad behavior.
Okay, I think it's been a really good discussion. Thank you very much, Bermet Talent, Kyrgyz journalist, joining us from Kiev today. Also, big thanks to Zehra Asilbek, feminist Kyrgyz singer, was joining from Bishkek. Kamila Sultanova, co-founder of Finland branch of Global Dignity, was joining us from Berlin today. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog Kishlov Uwozi, who was in Prague, joining us today from there. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Middle East, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week. Bye-bye.